closer.
Don't believe what I just saw!
I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay.
All right, it is that time of the week, Sportsaholics episode number 110. Can you believe that, Eric?
110.
Just like that. I mean, it came and it went, and I mean, I was looking back on it, so 6 years when we first started, when we first did our like pilot test episode, and you know, it seems about right, because there'd be months that would go by with nothing. Like, we would just, I'd be out of town, you'd be out of town, but again, being
on that minor league excursion, sure.
Yeah, that's right. Pardon me one second, I'm going to move. Listeners at home, I've got a new setup here, so I'm trying to figure out the best way that I can visually produce the show, aka watch the monitor, because I don't like talking with headphones on. It's weird to me, because it's bad enough me talking. I can't hear anything anyway, so with headphones on, it somehow makes it harder for me to talk. So I like to just visually watch the. So I got. Hold on, I'm going to move this real quick.
All right. By the way, guys, just listening at home, episode 110 is the equivalent to 11 Fran Tarkenton. So this is sort of like, imagine 11 Fran Tarkenton episodes jammed together. That's how big this one is.
I think we got a good setup right here. And all right, we're back. Back to baller status. And now I can see them. All right, we're good. So, look, a lot is happening. Look, you got the Colin Kaepernick. First of all, sponsors, onelovely.com. Guys, go get yourself a shirt at onelovely.com. A lot of original stuff, one-offs. If you're tired of going out and seeing someone wearing the same thing you're wearing, go to onelovely.com, because they got a bunch of shirts that, and they're only printing, you know, 50, 100 of them. So chances are no one else is going to have that shirt. And they got a lot of great stuff.
Be the in crowd. The only one with the cool t-shirt. Onelovely.com.
Yeah, or jacket or whatever, or skateboard deck. They got a bunch of stuff. But all right, let's get into it. Colin Kaepernick, he was in the Chargers land last night, or I'm just going to now start, I'm going to call them the California Chargers from here on out. So they're in San Diego. California Chargers are playing the 49ers, and Kaepernick sits down, has got a teammate that joins them, and
he takes a knee for the national anthem during Veterans Service Appreciation Night, Armed Service Appreciation Night. You know, they have they're not just singing the national anthem. They are having a Navy seaman in full dress uniform, a swabby, if you will. He's singing the thing, and Colin Kaepernick is taking a knee and doing what he do now. And, you know, I got his back. And that's, remember, guys, up there, if you're getting upset, the reason for America is that's why you're allowed to not, that's the genius of America. We're so free that we could burn the flag as a symbol of our freedom, that we don't have to. We're not Nazis, guys.
Look,
we're not communist Russia or China. We have the freedom to not pay respects to our national anthem or pledge allegiance to a flag. That's
somehow, kneeling, taking a knee is somewhat less disrespectful than sitting. To me, it's like, okay, you're kneeling maybe for another cause. My whole problem was just the mix-up. And in the sports media, I heard Colin Cowherd kind of had the similar view. But for me, it was what was lost in all of this was the actual problem. He was protesting, you know, for awareness and, cultural, just equality. And all that got lost in this, you know, stars and stripes hoorah which, look, I was offended. I didn't really, maybe offended's not the right word, but someone that has three cousins, close, you know, family members that are serving currently all around the world.
Yeah.
I was kind of offended. I'm like, look, I stand up every time when family time comes around, and one day I'm at the ballpark with my kids, I'm going to stand them up and explain to them why they're doing that. And I just think there needs to be a solution to the problem. And I think him doing that was a horrible start, is in the sense of trying to find a solution, because everyone just now was distracted for 10 days now about all the patriotic part of this. And now finally, after this game, I like what he said last night. He kind of just put his views or his, you know, put the cause on the forefront, back to the forefront. And it was less about sitting and standing and more about what he was protesting about in the first place. And that was the equality. Now, look, before I want to say something right here. This is what he should have done. And I saw all over social media, people on both sides. And look, people on both sides need to realize this, that part of the reason that you're upset on either side of it, it's like your opinion, part of that opinion is wrong. It's just not wrong. So you are not right. So you just need to meet in the middle here and just kind of go realize that both sides are being a little bit ridiculous and need to give a little bit, you know, towards the middle. But just everything he just went DeMarcus Cousins right now for the Sacramento Kings. Horrible on the court, amazing on the court, off the field, off the court problems with coaches constantly, you know, bickering, fighting, that kind of stuff with management. You know what? So you know what he's doing this weekend? This is what Colin Kaepernick should do. This is what everyone should do, regardless of race. If you're worried about, you know, police brutality, things like that. DeMarcus Cousins goes down, I believe, to Mississippi, Alabama, and he organized a massive community outreach with the police department so that the community can come out, meet the police. The police can then get faces and names and, like, meet people in the community and realize that, you know, they're human. The cops are human. Everyone's a human being, and kind of bridge that gap. So kudos to DeMarcus Cousins. I never thought I would ever give this guy any respect at all. He's a complete 180 with one. I mean, that's the smartest thing. That is making a difference, because that maybe saves someone's life 2 months from now. If there's an APB out for an armed robbery and a cop comes across some guy that he met at this function, then guess what? He's no longer a suspect. Or if he is, he talks to him and he's like, yeah, no, that, you know what I mean? Like, he humanized it. Just
he gets treated civilly instead of like a profiled suspect.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and now the cops can be profiled as actual humans and not just pigs and horrible, you know, murderers. And that's, so kudos to DeMarcus Cousins. Listeners out there, I challenge you to just dig up this story and share it with people, because I think this is the step in the right direction, and that's solving the problem. And that's just talking. I'm tired. Everyone's like, just talk about it. You can't just talk about it, really, because people don't want to hear your, if you disagree with them, then you're not going to have a conversation. You know, a lot of people don't know how to
absolutely true. But here's the thing. Like, look, here's, you know, it's funny. It's like you were saying there has to be a solution. And I totally disagree with you, Sheether. There does not need to be a solution to this. You know why there doesn't need to be a solution to this? Because this is America. And Colin Kaepernick is allowed to have whatever views. Colin Kaepernick is allowed to have whatever views and opinions he wants to, as long as his opinions and views don't infringe on anyone else's freedoms. Then he's allowed to think or do whatever he wants. That's America.
No. I'm in complete agreement.
When I say this, now here's the thing: freedom of speech means it doesn't mean that we just agree with stuff. It means like really, guys, everyone out there listening, realize this: the freedom of speech starts when somebody is saying something that drives you fucking literally insane. You know, it's like, if you have, like, look, I don't like Trump supporters talking about the walls or immigrants, okay, but you know what? Because we're Americans, they're allowed to speak their gibberish, and I can choose to listen or not listen to their gibberish. It's like, there's a point where this isn't a fix. This is a big, complex societal problem Colin Kaepernick actually did a great job saying, hey, look, I have family and friends that are police officers, as myself. I have several members, including my own mother, who served as a police officer. And I will tell you that there are hundreds of thousands of great police officers right now on duty. But you know what? What he also said is there are some bad ones. There are some bad cops. There are some people that aren't being cops, that aren't doing the job the right way, and they're not doing it for the right reason.
And look,
and
just to clarify, I agree with you completely. I was saying like there's a solution on a broader social, you know, like let's mend this cultural gap that's occurring right now in America kind of solution. Not necessarily.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at it from purely a PR, NFL, I'm looking at it from a much weirder perspective. I'm looking at, is Colin Kaepernick going to be the starting quarterback for the 49ers?
No.
Is he going to get cut? And then if he gets cut, will he still work in the NFL? Because now, in the world of the NFL, like, look, I have no problem with his opinion. But I also am a realist in the world of the NFL football system. And now, if he gets cut, he now has baggage, like Johnny Manziel has baggage, like Tim Tebow has baggage. That there's a certain thing where, like, what's his name? Michael Sam, the gay football player who's openly gay and comes out. This now becomes if another team wants to pick him up, the Cowboys clearly need somebody at quarterback. Could they use Colin Kaepernick? I bet you they could.
Well,
but will they now take him? That's a question for me.
Well, that's part of the problem here is that he's not a good quarterback. And maybe Rodney Harrison. I mean, he made the comment about him not being black, so that wasn't him. But one of the NFL players was talking about how because he was so good his rookie year, because no team in the NFL had a defensive scheme to stop what they were doing offensively. So as soon as you create a 5-month offseason, people run the film. And if you look statistically, you know, in the 5 years since, he has been average. I mean, he's been above average, you know, with his publicity.
That is absolutely true. It's the fact that people forget that he was launched on the springboard of what Alex Smith had done on the 49ers. There's a good chance that Alex Smith, had he played that Super Bowl instead of Colin Kaepernick, they may have never fallen behind as they did with the Ravens. And that could be a completely different game to the point where Harbaugh may still be the coach of the 49ers, and they could have multiple rings.
Yeah, and that was part of it, too, was that they were just like, he just kind of, and the 49ers have been a wreck for decades now, which for you younger listeners, you got to understand something. Like, when I was growing up, it was all about the 49ers. And I'm talking like 88 to, you know, the early 90s, right when you're in your most...
The 49ers were the Patriots. The 49ers were the Patriots. They were the gold standard. They were the best-run franchise. In some ways, like the Patriots. Like, the Patriots, you know, Patriots have only been good for the past 15 years. I mean, really good. But that was also, you know, when we're talking like 80 to 95... That's what we thought about. You know, we had Montana, 4 rings. We had Steve Young, 1 ring. And then you still had Jeff Garcia, which was sort of like the end of Empire, where it was like, you know, he was still a Pro Bowl
Yeah, and then, with the Garcia, you kind of had the original Michael Sam in the sense that everyone was like, is this guy gay? And then he went so I'm not gay that he marries a Playboy model, you know? So, I mean, they really had everything. And on top of that, you have Ronnie Lott, who's, I mean, he has the infamous, let me cut my finger off instead of sitting out the rest of the game. I mean, youngsters out there, when I say that, anyone, I guess, under 30 or 25, an amazing dynasty. And I guess with the luxury of NFL films, things like that nowadays, you've probably seen the footage. But you got to understand, you're right. It was very much a Patriots-type atmosphere. Anytime the 49ers were coming to town, I mean, it was really very, very similar, because you had what Brady has right now is what Montana had then. And, you know,
I mean, to me, they are so parallel in the fact that, honestly, before Montana, no one took the 49ers, like, no one talked about the San Francisco 49ers 1960 to 1970. No one is talking about that. And then they sort of just rise up and they become this model franchise for just decades upon decades. And even the fact it's very interesting because, you know, they had that weird thing with, you know, they got Alex Smith, but it never quite worked. And then they, you know, Mike Singletary was dropping his pants, you know, yelling at the team in boxer shorts. And then they get Harbaugh, and he actually makes Alex Smith work, and they get all these, you know, they get a real good defense going. And the weird thing is, it's like, you know, they've gotten old very fast, and they had a lot of retirement. You know, I think Harbaugh leaving made a lot of players into just dropping off and quit playing. You know, they had a lot of terrible injuries. I remember that to a couple of their middle linebackers with some horrific injuries.
Yeah. And that's what's...
You know, and so there's a weird thing. Where the one thing I will say is, I got to tell you, it's very interesting to me that, like, I find it interesting. This is a weird thing to say. And you know what? And if I'm racist or a profilist or an ist in any way, I'm going to take it on this one. Because what I'm enjoying in a weird way is I'm enjoying, let's call it, this is now politically active Kaepernick, right? This is politically active Kaepernick, which he's never been before. I mean, he's been in the league now for 5 years, and we've never seen this. Right? Am I wrong?
No, in fact, that was one of the points that I overheard was, if you actually go back and look at his social media feed over the past few months, there's been not a peep about anything like this, and now all of a sudden, you know.
But now, it's not just his opinion, it's like, also, I mean, like, there's a great throwback 1970s, late 60s Afro thing going. You know, it's like, I'm ready for the Olympic black loved race fifth. I'm ready for this great political movement in a way. It's funny to me because it's like political action Barbie would have this hairdo. Does that make sense? It's like all of a sudden it's so stereotypical we're now that he's a quarterback who's politically aware, we have this great sort of throwback hairdo to the 70s, and I like that.
No, it's almost so cliched that it draws away from what he's saying. You know what I mean? It's like, you didn't have to do that. And secondly, it's not a good afro. If you get it from a side profile, it's got a weird bump on the back. Like, I mean, he didn't even have it.
What I'm going to tell you, as white people, we never judge other people's afros.
Bullshit! I had a fro.
I'm going to tell you. Never a good look as a white person, she's to be judging a black man's afro.
I can, because I had
afro, or even a Jew fro.
I've had a fro. I had a fro in college. My hair is really thick. In fact, I had lovely ladies of African American descent come up and say, "Hey, sweetie, do you mind if we touch your hair?" And I said, "No." And they patted my head and they said, "Wow, I've never seen hair like that before on a white boy." And I said, "No, I just have really thick hair." And so it was a weird, it was one of those
weird... We might need pictures of this. We might need pictures of this afro.
Yeah, I'll dig them out.
Fro.
Look, it's pre-digital.
Yeah, we need the she's fro. We need to see the she's fro to believe it.
It's pre-digital, so it's going to be hard to dig them up.
I understand. We're going to have to scan some things in, right?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, for I have, you know, because I've seen the videos now where they're like, where it's the white lady, it's the spoof video where they're at work, and then the lady, "Oh, like, what do you use to treat your hair?" And like, how do you, you know, and it's like the real ignorant white person asking questions about black people's hair and how they treat it. But I've felt what that's like, but opposite, you know, the tables turned since my hair was so, you know, and it's, I didn't mind so much. I just said, you know, I rarely condition my hair, and it's thick as hell. You notice? See,
all right, well, this is news to me. I'm glad, if anything, think about this. This Colin Kaepernick's controversy has totally brought out the she's fro, which I have no knowledge. We've done this show for over 6 years. I've known you for probably 12, longer than that, and I've never heard of it. I've heard many of your stories and many of your, but this is brand new to me. So thank you, Colin Kaepernick.
Just ask Ingram. He'll verify the she's fro. Eli will, ampersand right. Will. Well, okay. Before we go to break, later on this episode, I pulled some great footage from 610 Sports in Kansas City, a great sports station, and they had Art Stewart, our guy in studio, our favorite guest ever on the show.
Yep.
and it's a great interview. So I recorded that. So at the end of the episode, I'm gonna play that interview in its entirety. It's about, I think, 25 minutes. They get into some great Ted Williams stories. It's more of, it is baseball themed. You know, there's some Royals talk out. So don't be distracted by that. But there are some great baseball, some old Yankee stories from the 50s. So.
There's a bonus interview after our show.
Yes, exactly.
Bonus.
Exactly.
And then if you stay to the end of that, we're gonna if you listen to the end credits, you'll see how Art Stewart ties into the Avenger movie. So that's really good.
And so it's kind of not to beat, because I'm Kaepernicked out at this point. And so we'll go to break. Do you have any last words on it? I'll close up on my thoughts on it, and then we'll go to break.
I'm all good. Who is the starting quarterback for the 49ers?
It's going to be Blaine Gabbert.
Oh, God, right.
Missouri's finest. Missouri's finest.
He
was the guy that came in after, I always forget this poor dude's name. He was a backup for the Saints and then backup for the Chiefs. He's in Philadelphia. He's in Philly right now, but he was Missouri's first good quarterback. Gabbert came in. He was, a top pick or top three picks, but anyway, his career has fizzled out, but he is still, again, better than Kaepernick. My thought when I first heard it, his announcement last week, my first impression was that this was him almost telling everyone that he considered himself to be black. You know, that's how I kind of took it. And it was just kind of like, oh, okay. So now, like, I see. And that's kind of how I perceived it. I think a lot of people were kind of shocked too. You know, obviously Rodney Harrison was with his comments, but again, that was a week ago. And like you said earlier, his comments after the game last night or after the Chargers game down here in San Diego, I thought were great. And I think this whole thing is kind of heading in the right direction now.
Yeah.
And by that meaning, hopefully winding down and solutions. And guys, remember,
let me say this. If there's anybody out there that's really upset about Colin Kaepernick, what I would like you to do is I'd like to take the energy you would use to post something about Colin Kaepernick or to bitch to your friends. Take all that energy, all that hate or feelings or whatever you have about Colin Kaepernick, I'd like you to take that energy and apply it to stopping the things that Colin Kaepernick's actually talking about. Instead of being upset about what some football player's saying, why don't you go and try to help fix things in your community or anything you do to just put things out there? It's not a binary thing of Black Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter or being one of these people that all lives matter. It's like, look, there's a lot of things. It's a very complicated system. There's a very complicated ant farm we live in this world and in this country. And we don't all get along nice, and you know a lot of bad things are happening. And instead of just sitting behind your tablet or your phone or your computer and typing out some little memes, do something positive and affect change and get involved in your community and make things better.
That's DeMarcus Cousins it up. And you heard me right. Do what DeMarcus Cousins did. You know, just stuff like that. And retweeting and sharing some real extreme video on either side of the debate is not helping. That's actually throwing gasoline on the fire. So cut that stuff out. Don't, like, play into the game.
If you're very upset that he's not honoring the veterans and he's not honoring all the people who actually died for that flag or for this country, just realize that the people that you love in your life that have given the ultimate sacrifice for this country and for the freedom this country provides, he is actually honoring them by using his freedom. He has the freedom. We in America have the freedom not to salute the flag. That's how great America is. We're not Nazis. We're not all one single-minded minion. We have free will and we have freedom. God bless America. Let's go to break.
Yeah, and with that being said, I'd like to thank my grandfather John, my grandfather Walter, and my cousins currently Zach in the Army. I've got my cousin Matt in the Air Force and my cousin Walter in the Navy. Thank you guys for your service. Appreciate it. And we'll be back after this. All right, we are back. And little known fact that I was just educated. Eric, do you want to share with the listeners about the national anthem? A little trivia.
Some of you might know who watched the Ken Burns documentary, the baseball documentary, is the first time the national anthem was ever played in front of a sporting event. It was not yet the national anthem. It was one of the ways that the Star-Spangled Banner was on its way to become our national anthem. It was played, the sporting event it was played in front of was the Red Sox 1918 World Series. We were still at the very tail end of World War One. And you're once again welcome. Boston has led the way, America. You're welcome. Red Sox.
Which the Red Sox are on. I mean, as a Royals fan, we're still three games out. We just lost two out of three of the Yankees that we lost two of the games in like the 11th and the 12th inning with men on third, no outs. That like just brutal losses. And we've been.
Yeah, well, I never like anybody who loses to the Yankees. You know, so.
Right, and you know, for the Red Sox, so now the Yankees are right back in the mix, you know, for the wild card, and they've got this Gary Sanchez kid who just can't not hit a home run every other game, and
they've
got all this talent that they just got for this Andrew Miller, and that dude, what a brilliant look, Major League GMs. Here's what you do: you scout the league and you see where all the other franchises are. And you do what the Yankees do. You sign some relief pitchers and you trade them. You pay them. You have them for a half season. And then you trade them away for everyone's top prospects. Replenish your farm system. And now it looks like the Yankees are on pace to just be stacked here for the next decade, which I'm not looking forward to. But the Red Sox, I don't know. Your pitching is, I don't know. It's good, but... Price is just, I don't know if it's a run support thing or what, but he gets shelled every like fifth start, it seems like now. But the Red Sox
isn't Price. That is one of the problems. And we have paid an ace stopper, and he is not performing like an ace stopper. We have a weird thing that we have Rick Porcillo, who is 18-1 or something like that.
Yeah.
I think he's the first Red Sox pitcher in 60 years to be 13-0 at Fenway. 60 years. That thing is way back to when the Red Sox won the game.
Well, and before that it was like not Colin McHugh in Houston, but Keuchel. Like he last year he went 15 straight wins at home before he finally lost. And that like you said, that hadn't happened in 60 years, and now it's happening again the next year. With the Red Sox, but look, every September is exciting, and you get to look back over the summer and say, man, what a great summer. We did X, Y, Z. We didn't get around to doing, you know, A, B, and C. Wow. Time flies. Look at this great playoff race. I mean, that's just about every year, but for some reason, and maybe it's as a Royals fan, we're sitting three back and every game counts. We can only lose like 9 more games to legitimately have a chance of making the playoffs. So it's really intense for me. But it seems like every division, I mean, the East right now, you got 4 teams. I mean, the AL West, I mean, really, Seattle's.
Well, hold on. Before we get into the races, I'd like to talk about the one non-race that actually concerns me the most. Because it was just the other morning that, you know, I've had a very busy summer, with the roast battle and the Olympics and opening for Leslie Jones. And I recently got to see that. I went to the Rob Lowe roast. So, guys, on Labor Day, check that out, the roast of Rob Lowe, which is lots of funny stuff. But the other morning, I woke up to really settle in and see the news of what's happening with the Red Sox and what's the state of all the – what are the state of the races. So I go to the standings, and lo and behold, who's 15 games up? The Chicago Cubs. The Chicago Cubs are the only – they are the best team in baseball, hands down. They are 15 games up in their division. There is no race. There is no chase. No one is going to catch the Cubs in the NL Central. And now realize this. We are coming down to that Halloween – possible like that Halloween World Series game. You know, that weird week and a half where we have – you know, where this year we have Halloween and we have presidential elections. And I'm a little bit concerned, Steve, personally, because I've made a lot of the world will end when the Cubs win the World Series jokes. And I'm saying, but there's a real possibility the Cubs could win the World Series, and then we have to elect either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Wow, does that seem apocalyptic to me? I mean, that might be the Cubs, Hillary, and Trump. They may be three of the four horsemen of the apocalypse right there. It's just the three of them. You know what I'm saying?
I'm a little worried. I kind of agree with you because, I mean, when people are like, oh, the Cubs are going to win, I'm like, you don't get it. They're the Cubs. They're not going to win. Don't you get it? I mean, they don't win. That's why they're the Cubs. And that's
you know, in 1995, I made an agreement with myself as a fan that I believed in the 100-year plan. I was a Red Sox fan, and we hadn't won since 1918, as you may know. It was 1995, and I just really, I wanted my entire franchise, my favorite franchise, the Boston Red Sox, I just needed them to win one by 2018. Fortunately, that's worked out. I've bagged three, and we still have a couple seasons to spare. The Chicago Cubs are over that now. They are now at 108 and counting. I believe that every fan base does have a right in some way to expect a title once every century. I don't think that's too much to ask.
No, it's not, especially when you watch teams like the Marlins come in as startup franchises and Diamondbacks and immediately, well, in the Marlins' case, win two World Series within their first 8 years of existence. The Rockies have made it to the World Series that didn't win, thanks to your Red Sox. It's gotta be even the Diamondbacks in 01, which, you know, is I was happy about anytime the Yankees can go, shouldn't have shifted the infield. It would have been a pop fly Yankees win, but you know, whatever, it happens. But anyway, it's they're due, but they're the Cubs. I mean, look at last year.
Are they? These Joe Madden Cubs, these Theo Epstein Cubs. Theo Epstein has the chance to break two curses, and shouldn't he be like Gretzky, instantly put in the Hall of Fame? Don't we just retire Theo's number and just put Theo in every ballpark across the nation? We retired 99 or 42 for Jackie Robinson?
See, here's what I'm predicting with Theo Epstein. And it starts with winning with the Cubs. Maybe he hangs on to that for 10 more years, okay? So now, at probably, what, 50, 51 years old, he's got...
He's younger than me. That's right. He's younger than me. I'm not 100% sure that he's actually 40 right now.
He might be like 41, I think, 42, something like that. Yeah. So at this point, you're 50, and you've got two decades of being a general manager, and his position, I believe, in Chicago is some sort of president, general manager, like just whatever title he can have.
He's the general manager. Yeah, he's the president of baseball operations or whatever, sure.
And so you break the curse in Boston. You get was he a part of the third championship there in 13? Was he gone, or was that his last year? Or was he already gone by then?
I don't think he technically – he came back. That's a great question. Where's the 08 thing? God, I don't know where he is. It's not the –
Either way,
again with the 017. Yeah, I guess he's around.
That's a lot of
the pieces that he brought.
Yeah.
You know, there's a classic. I mean, there's still that, but that's always the thing with the Red Sox is that it's like Theo came in and matched a lot of he took a lot of the guys like Manny Ramirez, Nomar Garciaparra, Pedro Martinez that Dan Buchanan brought, and then he brings in the new guys, and then it's like these are also he's the guy that brought up say the Papelbons and the Ellsberries that helped you in 07, and now we're also dealing with these are like the guys some of the guys they're bringing up now are guys that Ben Charrington and Theo had drafted.
Now was Arroyo, was he on the 04 or was he on the 08 team?
Who's this?
Bronson Arroyo.
Bronson Arroyo is on the they win in 07.
They're 07.
04, 07 and 13.
Is he on the 07?
He's on the 07.
Okay, gotcha. But anyway, what got sidetracked there? What I was getting at was, so now he goes to Chicago, and if the Cubs get one or two, or if the Cubs get any. So at this point, he's ended roughly two centuries worth of drought in these two franchises. The most historic,
sure.
Aside from the Yankees, some might argue the Athletics or even Phillies, for the most historic, or the Pirates, I mean, as the most historic franchises. So at this point...
No one's arguing that.
Look, the Pirates have been around since like the 1880s. That's like
I understand that.
But anyway, what I was getting at is he now then transitions to he somehow out Joe Torre's Joe Torre. I mean, he never coaches or anything like that, but then he'll become commissioner of the Major League Baseball. And then at that point, I'm thinking international expansion. I know they keep talking about Mexico City, and maybe that's a start, but I really feel like you put a team in, maybe two teams in Japan. Maybe you stand to put a team down in Australia, and definitely maybe a team, maybe two in Korea. And this is the formula that I have that I think would work, is that you have these major league teams in these countries that already have existing teams. So then what happens is you adapt that Premier League soccer kind of format. So the best team that wins the championship in that country, let's say the Doosan Bears in Korea. So now the next season, the Doosan Bears is now playing against Major League Baseball teams. So they travel to North America.
So you play it like football clubs where you move people up.
Yes, exactly.
Now, but, I see what you're saying.
But that is
old. By the way, my mistake, Bronson Arroyo is on the 04, he's on the 04 team because Bronson Arroyo is involved with the A-Rod slapping the ball out of their hand in 04. He then just traded. He's not part of the 07.
Okay. Nice. I appreciate the correction there. The only problem I think that, and this is based on, you know, international talent continuing to grow and get better and stronger. Major League Baseball expanding internationally more and more every year. The Royals just signed kind of like the Cal Ripken Jr. of the Japanese leagues back in the 90s. They just signed him as an international director. The Royals did. So it just continues to grow. And so there might be some disparity in talent, like, you know, as these teams maybe change every year and are different teams. But I think that I don't think they would be any worse than like a bottom of a division team that you would play. And then part of that also would be, so then like your Australia team and Japan and Korea teams.
The only thing I've heard about that, I mean, I like everything you're saying. The one thing I've always heard is the difference. One of the bigger differences in Japanese ball is the ball is actually a little bit different. The diameter of the ball is different. I've heard it's a tad bit smaller.
Well, I mean, you know,
it's almost like the difference of, say, you know, like, because the ball is a little different in FIBA basketball than it is in NBA competition.
Like,
because because I went through Dice K and Nomo and a lot of the Japanese pitchers, you know, and they also have like they have the six man rotations, right? They seem like they do it, you know, and they throw for 200 innings, but like they seem to do things slightly differently.
No, they do. And look, in 15, 20 years from now, like, everything's getting closer and closer. I mean, and there's no doubt the Japanese players know how to play. I mean, there's records of the Japanese All-Stars, you know, playing competitively with, you know, the barnstorming All-Stars, you know, of America back in the 30s. But that's just where the game's going, and it has to expand. They've bled out America. I mean, where are you going to put it? Are you going to put a expansion franchise in Memphis or Nashville? No. So the next step is definitely international, and Mexico City's a good start. But, you know, it's an easy flight for everybody. In some cases, it'll be just like a southern version of Seattle. Like, if you look at a geographical map with all the teams where they have their logos positioned on the map, you look at Seattle and you just think, like, they have to fly probably, I don't know, they spend probably twice as much time in the air as, say, the Yankees or the Mets, who are positioned on the East Coast and fly to Boston and Baltimore, you know, and so you're at a huge disadvantage as a Mariners player. But so it would kind of be something like that, but I don't know. I would almost rather they go back to Montreal before they go to Mexico City, just because of the baseball heritage. And that incredible documentary that they released a couple months ago.
Well, I love Montreal, so I'm always about that. I love UP. I love the Expos. You know, it's like I love Gary Carter when he was an Expo. Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez is an Expo. They had one of the greatest. They've had, you know, the Montreal Expos has like a great all-time team. If you're putting together, you know, franchises, all-time team.
Very much so.
I mean, of course, the Yankees have a Hall of Famer basically at every position. many storied franchises do, but really it will surprise you how good the Montreal Expos all-time team would be.
On the short list, I'm just going to say, this is just debatable. Like, Marquise Grissom was solid, Larry Walker, amazing, Pedro Martinez, sure. Randy Johnson, Vladimir Guerrero. Did Tim Raines play with the Expos briefly?
Oh, yeah, the Hawk, absolutely. Yeah. And Andre, right. You're saying it's like you're starting. Give me a pitching staff that starts with Pedro Martinez and Randy Johnson. Give me Vlad Guerrero and Larry Walker and Gary Carter behind the plate. I'm going to take my chances.
Yeah.
I'm really going to take my chances.
That stacks up really well. Yeah, with any team. And I love Gary Carter. I love how candid he was in that Daryl and Doc Gooden documentary. And he's just like, we had a good time. And Keith Hernandez is like, yeah, look, I'm no saint. So I'm not going to go tattletale on anybody. I recommend that documentary if you haven't seen it.
Well, it's also Keith Hernandez is one of those guys that it's like he's so close to looking like Ralphie El Palmero, you know, he's just glad he wasn't Ralphie El Palmero.
Yeah, it's hard.
To... Congress pointing his finger, denying stuff that later would come back to haunt him. He's like, Keith Hernandez is basically the Ralphie Palmero that doesn't deny anything. Ralphie El Palmero made the mistake of actually, saying stupid things and saying something that didn't hold up, where... You know, Hernandez was where all the coke bodies are buried, if you know what I'm saying.
That's hilarious. Switch up to NFL, make college, or any Patriots worries? Just the usual?
We do have some worries. Rob Ninkovich, one of our all-time, linebacker, defensive end. He's one of those, like, he's a heart and soul player. I mean, he's one of those guys that, he's not your number one guy. He's not the guy that the NFL is selling as a franchise defensive guy. But this is a glue guy. This is a guy that year after year has just keeps making plays, high motor, and he's gone for 4 weeks with a banned substance. So both him and Brady are gone for all of September. And so my birthday gift, which, my birthday, guys, you don't have to buy me anything, but it's coming up at the end of the month, September. So what I'm getting for my birthday is Tom Brady and Rob Ninkovich back in Patriots uniforms playing October 5th in Cleveland.
Don't you hear the problem with
that? Go well.
With that, what you just said, you go, Rob Ninkovich plays with the high motor, just banned for substances. Well, don't you question, that motor isn't going to be as high as it once was.
I'm going to be more real. I'm going to say this, guys. I'm not against any substance. Here's how I look at it. I look at it as you're an athlete. You've decided to make a commitment to be in track and field or to swim or play basketball. As far as I'm concerned, what you do to your body, Barry Bonds, blow your head up like the Goodyear blimp. If other people aren't willing to do it, that's on them. I don't believe there is such thing as all men are not created equal. Let me tell you that from the start. And I don't mean that to be, anti-American. I just meant realistic. And let me tell you how I am not in no way equal to Michael Phelps or Usain Bolt. I just don't. I could never do, even though I did all the training that Usain Bolt and Michael Phelps did, I could never achieve anything close to what they achieve in the pool or on a track. With that said, I'm not against anybody doing anything, putting whatever Twinkie, whatever pill, whatever powder, whatever smoothie into their body. I don't care if these guys are on coke, meth. I don't care because it doesn't hurt anyone else except that person's body.
So you just want like
and everything else. Honestly. When I hear people talk about the integrity of the game, that's when everyone in America is becoming a soccer mom. It's not fair. This isn't everybody gets a participation trophy.
No, it's
this
entertainment
NFL,
and
Major League Baseball, the Olympics, whatever it is. As far as I'm concerned, there should be no testing for anything. Do whatever you want.
Look, and it's been in the game for decades. Everyone knows the greenies, the blueies, and so you would prefer if it was just like. Let's look at Lyle Alzada as an example. Sure. And so everyone, like, look, if you want to put that in your body and suffer the consequences, but be the man for 8 years, by all means, because it is very entertaining. Or Brian Bosworth, you know, sure. something like that. You're like, whatever, green light it.
Sure. Like, in that sense, it's like, you know, it's like, I don't like Lance Armstrong and his lying and cheating ways. But on the other hand, I am all for blood doping. I mean, I'm not for Lance Armstrong because I think how he handles himself in the world of, hey, we all do this, he is kind of a shitty person. Because then he, you know, he had to lie and try to, and he hurt other people's careers with his lie. So
right,
I'm not
right.
down with what Lance Armstrong does.
Yeah, he
but
was...
on the other hand, as far as I'm concerned, everyone in the Tour de France should be able to put whatever the fuck they want in their pedal, in their bike, the pedals after, whatever they want.
I'll tell you this, I haven't watched, not that I was watching the Tour de France that closely, but I haven't watched a second of the Tour de France in over 8 years, and I'm kind of happy to say that. And thank you, Lance Armstrong, sure. for finally fessing up, kind of. But yeah.
But I will say, here's a true American champ of the Tour de France, Greg LeMond. That's the one I grew up with. Greg right. the World LeMond. you know, it's like, but again, I don't think, it's like, look, I don't care if your son or daughter can compete with someone else's son or daughter. It isn't fair. It isn't equal. It, you know, we're talking sports, and sports is meant to decide who is better.
Yep, on a physical plane. All right.
Trust me, I just went to Rio. Only one person got gold medals, unless it was a dead tie. You know what I'm saying? It's like there were. I did actually get to see. I got to see two people swim so fast that they tied for gold medals. But again, it's like not everybody in the pool got a participation medal from the Olympics.
Well, okay.
So whatever you want in your body and reap the consequence.
All right. So let's go to this Art Stewart interview. This is okay. So again, this is from 610 Sports in Kansas City. You can listen to them online. That's where I got the interview from, at 610sports.com. This is Carrington Harrison and Danny Parkins' Afternoon Drive show. And so they had Art in studio, I think it was like 2, maybe 3 days ago. So let's go to that, and then we'll be right back after break.
Stewart is with us now. That might right there. Heis, how you doing, Mr. Stewart?
Really happy to be here, guys, again. Good to see both of you. Kind of down a little bit, but, you know, that's baseball. We lost 2 tough games in extra innings last couple days. But you have to put it behind you and look what's ahead. And we got all of September, 2 days in October, and some good things can happen. If we play like we have the last 2 Septembers, we got a chance for the fans to see playoff games again in Kansas City.
Art, fewer people know Dayton Moore as well as you do. What is it about Dayton's personality that for the last couple of seasons always believes this team has that second half run? This team was 52-60 and looked out of it at that point. And Parkins and I talked about it. A lot of people talked about it. They look to be playing out the string of the rest of the season. Next thing you know, the Royals win 18 out of 20 games and then firmly put themselves back in this race. What about Dayton always kind of foresees this kind of stuff happening?
Well, you really have to know Dayton. He leaves no detail unturned. He just doesn't make a statement like that. He looks at the complete full picture. He sees what's in the system, because of the good scouting and the reports that he has, and his contacts in baseball, his discussion with the coaches and the manager, of course, are so important. And he digests all that, and he's so good so good after digesting all of the input to come up with a decision. And he did that year. And who knew when the last time I talked to you, I'm certain that neither one of you heard the name Strom, Matt Strom.
No, you didn't tell us about him, Art. Where were you on that one?
You always give us the heads up.
Well, I had gone down to Arkansas to see him, and it was amazing. I saw him. He's a starter. In the first game I saw him, we liked him. We saw him in spring training. But he was up in the zone a little bit, and Dayton says, is he ready? And I said, not yet, but I think at some time this year he can help us in relief or, you know, before he can as a starter. And but I said he's been up in his own a little too much with his pitches. But Steve Luber, the former major league pitcher, who's very good at working on him, staying down in his own. So Dayton said, stay down there another 5 days, see him in his next start. I stayed down there. He was down in his own with all his great stuff. And he pitched a one-hit shutout for six innings. And we watched him closely, and shortly after that, you know, he was brought up, and he is something special. But
he's fun to watch, too.
He is.
He's a lot of fun to watch.
He is, and he's cool as a cucumber, too.
We had him on a couple of days ago, and I hadn't talked to him yet. A little shy with the media. We're talking about Matt Strom. Very superstitious. I didn't know that. We kind of stumbled into it in the conversation. What is it about baseball player? This team, some of them believe in a bug. The fans definitely believe in a bug.
The bug is a big thing right now.
Yeah, I know. Do you believe in the rally mantis?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of super. I think if you're in baseball, you do have. And, you know, we're on a streak, and if I'm at the game or watching a game, if I use a certain pen or pen that particular night we win, and then we keep winning, I keep using the same one, even though I got five or six in front of me. Art. I mean, different things like that, and that's baseball. Those superstitions are there with most of the players.
See, Art, Danny doesn't believe in superstition, jinxes, or curses or anything because many people believe that Danny is cursed. We have this thing called the Parkins Pick of Death, where once Parkins gives a prediction or likes a player, instantly goes to hell then at that point with Parkins' prediction. So that's why he's very anti-superstition, curses, all of that.
And as a Cubs fan, I just feel like I can't afford to believe in it because it'll just drive me crazy if I believe that there's some sort of supernatural power out there working against my team.
Well, I think you're going to find out for real if such a thing exists this year.
Yeah. And by the way, Danny Duffy came on the show, who's my favorite Royal, and said that I am not a curse and not a jinx and no such thing exists. And he wanted people talking to him when he had the no-hitter going. You've been in the game nearly 70 years. Who's the most superstitious player or person you ever encountered?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. There have been, you know, there have been so many.
Or weirdest superstition that comes to mind, however you want to answer the question.
I can remember... this is way, way back. Ted Williams, for instance.
No, that's fine. Ted Williams, superstition will play here. Yeah, that's
one of his things. This is something that's maybe nobody has ever heard, but it's a true story. Before Ted got up in the morning, he would call the secretary of the Boston Red Sox when they were home, wanting to know how the wind, what the weather conditions were, how the wind was blowing that particular day. She had to give him all the exact information on that. And that was something he was so superstitious about, but it was something that was maybe in his plan. And nobody really pinned him down. Why do you have to know all that, Ted? But that's something he wanted to know.
Why couldn't he find out when he got to the ballpark?
He wanted to know He wanted to know ahead of time. He always called her.
Wow.
Always called her every morning that they were home at Fenway Park.
And it had to be the same person to tell him the weather conditions and the wind conditions
exactly,
every time.
Exactly.
Wow. You know Ted Williams' baseball superstitions, Art. That's going to make the next book?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I feel like it should. The Art of Scouting has all those sorts of stories in it. We're going to, in the next segment, we're going to go over this chart, the Kansas City Royals, the whole ball player, the circle, and you're going to explain what it means. I am curious, because I was talking about this the other day, and we've talked about it before. Maybe the best word to describe this team the last two-ish seasons is relentless. They don't freaking quit, and they just keep coming when most people have given up on them. How much of the bottom half, the stuff that you can't see, it's not the speed, it's not the arm, it's not the power, how much of the relentlessness that we see on the field do you believe is scouted through the intangibles of the person?
Very, very big. Very, very big. We've talked about this before, but as we get into that later, it's to Dayton, it's so important to get the right player, not just talent-wise, but all those things that you see when we talk about it in the bottom of that circle. And it's
attitude, mental, winner, background, and personality.
Yeah, and you'll see it reflected in a lot of these guys that you're talking about right now that have been so relentless in bringing us these great years and great seasons with a lot of wins.
Have you ever seen a team more relentless?
I can't say. You know, I was with all those great Yankee teams, but they didn't. They were in a fashion that way, but not nearly like this. I mean, there were so many good players, and they were just true professionals. And they had the difference then was no. You know, the players stayed with those teams for years. No free agency or anything like that.
Right.
So, and they. They knew each other, and it was more business at hand, and they knew they were good, and we'll do the work. Whereas these kids are talented, but they have that never give up. I think a great example was, remember the one game last year where we were down in one of the big games, and Moustakas says, "Let's go, let's go," you know, and we came back and
Astros
won. Remember
division,
that game?
Houston game, yeah. And, down 6-2.
Yeah, that was a typical example.
Yeah, no, it's remarkable, and like the other night, there's a rain delay, and it's late, and they're tired, and they're down, and then it's like, well, they threatened in the sixth, and
got
they threatened
back
in the seventh, and then they tied it in the eighth, and it's just like it felt like as you were watching it was like, well, it was going to happen at some point. It was just a question of when it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable. It's crazy to watch. His book is The Art of Scouting. We have the scouting chart here in studio. And we are going to have the legendary scout, special assistant to Dayton Moore, Art Stewart, explain at the basis how he fills one of these things out for players. He has scouted all of your favorite current Kansas City Royals. He's going to tell us how he does it coming up next on The Drive.
The Drive with Danny and C-Dot from the MVP Electric Heating and Cooling Studios, 610 Sports Radio.
Into The Drive. The book is The Art of Scouting. You can get it at Kauffman Stadium. You can get it at Rally House. You can get it on Amazon, of course. And this chart that we're going to talk about is on page 245 of the book. And as always, we'll have Art Stewart sign a copy of the book and then give away a copy within an hour of this segment. So all you have to do is be listening for your chance to win. So I'm going to just describe this briefly on the radio, and then I want you to explain what it is. At the top, it says Kansas City Royals, the whole ball player. And then it's a circle with a line through the middle. On top, can be seen with the eye, things you can see with your eye. The bottom half cannot be seen with the eye. And so, and then on the top half, they have just different attributes underneath the different positions. So there is the things underneath pitcher, like arm strength, fastball, curveball, slider, other pitching control, then a whole list of caveat things for infielders and outfielders, for catchers, and then things general for all players. Reflexes, coordination, record if in pro ball, base running, eyesight, all sorts of stuff like that. Then on the bottom page, cannot be seen with the eye, attitude, mental, personality, background, and winner, with a bunch of attributes listed under those. Can you kind of
break down how you go about attributing each thing and how you go about, like what does the chart on something like this look like for a guy like Eric Hosmer or Mike Moustakas or something like that?
To begin with, you're looking at the top of the chart, and that's the physical ability. And fortunately, you brought a name up that I did see, and everything was extraordinary about him. He, to fit into that top of the circle, he was a heck of an athlete. He had one of the best batting practices I think I ever saw. The bat speed was absolutely, you know, unbelievable. Watching him take infield practice, I saw him in a state tournament, his last game for the state championship, and he got a big booming triple and made it 2-0 against Chipper Jones's old school. And what do you think happened in the last inning, 7-inning game for the state championship? They're ahead 2-0. Who comes in the pitch? Eric Hosmer. 95, 96, 97. 9 pitches, 3 strikeouts, game over.
Why didn't they put him in the 13th inning last night?
So
just an idea.
So you started to see the tremendous versatility of this young man. And then I had a chance to really absorb him because I was there 2 days ahead of time. I saw 3 games in a state tournament. I saw the interaction with his teammates. I saw the heart and desire and the drive and how bad he wanted to win. You know, that these are things that we're talking about below the circle. And he showed the mental toughness because he came in. You know, he was in a clutch situation. And then the other thing, after being there 3 days, seeing the family and meeting the family, who are wonderful people, you had that bottom half. Now the scout, Alex Mesa, that scouted him for 3 years, got to know the family, got to know all those things that we look for below the circle, knew his girlfriend real well. He knew the, you know, people at the church that they associated with. We had, so when we drafted.
And that's all on the up and up, right? I don't mean to interrupt you, but the girlfriend knows that she's associated with a scout from the Royals, right? It's not like you hear sometimes these stories about, you know. I had to do my, in the NFL, we had to do deep background on a guy, and we go and we talk to the janitor at the school to try to get some gossip. This is all, you just are basically trying to get a bunch of sources to fill out this chart on Eric Hosmer.
And the right sources.
And the right sources.
Yes, the right sources. And that's ingrained in our scouts. That's Staten's philosophy. And it's a good one, and it's reflected at the major league level on the type of players, even in the Latin America, digging in as much as you can. And it's tougher down there, naturally, comes the environment and the poverty they grow up in. But you look at some of our guys, Salvador, I think you get a good, gives you a good example. Once in a while, there are a few things that are off track a little, but for basically, when we draft a player, we're drafting what the Royals consider a whole player, what that chart is. If you want to, in other words, when we put it this way to the scouts, you see a kid that you really like, if they want to be a Kansas City Royal, they got to match up with the majority of things on that whole circle chart. And that's what we look for. Intelligence is a big thing. How smart is a kid, especially a pitcher?
What type of intelligence?
Well, intelligence to the degree that they will go above and beyond what the average player might do. And I'm going to give you an example. I just was in Lexington, Kentucky. That's another story. If we got time, I'll tell you about it.
We have time.
An unusual situation today. But I'm sitting, in Royal Stadium, sitting behind a plate. I was in Lexington 6 days looking at our club. The player that we picked first this year, Puckett, I'm sitting there, and the two guys always have a couple kids come in and chart for the club. Well, he comes in and sits next to me. He's pitching the next night. And I said, Puck, I said to him, I said, what are you doing here? I said, are you working tonight? He says, no, I'm just here for my personal observation. And he had a little black book. A little black book. I'm getting to beyond what we're talking about here. And he says, I like to see the team. I did it in college when I could. I like to see the team that I'm going to pitch against the night before and take notes and make a game plan on how I'm going to pitch those pitchers, hitters. So we're sitting there, and they got this big cleanup hitter. I'll give you an example of one hitter. And this guy's taking that fastball and smoking out left center pretty good, especially up a pitch midway. So he puts down, he's putting down, hitting midway. But we also saw our pitcher run hard sliders in on him. Put a little note down there. And each hitter, he's making notes on. The big guy comes up the next night. He got him two strikes on him, hard slider in. He's punched out. What does he do that night? He goes out there like a surgeon and pitches a no-hit game for 5 innings. Only 59 pitches. I mean, he was painting the corners. He never threw a ball over the middle of the plate. That's something else. But the point I'm getting at is what we're talking about here. Here's a guy that's going on above and beyond with any coach or manager told him to help himself. And these are the things that you see in some players they're intangibles to a degree, but we love to see things like that, and we're getting a lot of players like that.
Earlier you were telling the story about Eric Hosmer. You said that he came into pitch and relief, and he was throwing 95, 96. How important is it to draft guys that are good at more than one thing? I go back to Zach Greinke. Like, everybody talks about Zach Greinke's ability to play shortstop, and if he had focused his craft on playing shortstop, he could have made it in the majors at that position. How big is that to the Royals organization, guys that can do more than one thing?
Yeah, you're very right in what you just said, Karen, and Greinke's a good example. A lot of clubs were going to take him in a first round as a position player. And we can go way back to answer your question, because through the years, it's something that we've looked for, and I'm sure other clubs look for. You go back to Dave Winfield. Dave Winfield, club struggled. Do they want him as a pitcher, or do they want him as a position player? And the more kids that you find with that athletic ability that can go both ways, they seem to end up being among the better ball players that make the major leagues.
We're talking to Art Stewart. His book is The Art of Scouting. He's brought in the chart on what can be seen with the eye and not seen with the eye, and how the Royals go about scouting players specifically. Coming up next, it's 50-50 with the eye, without the eye on the chart, with the subsets of it, the different things in there. I want to kind of do some comparison shopping on what the most important traits are, or if it's all even, and give me some examples of when you prioritized one thing over the other. So we'll do that with Art Stewart coming up on The Drive.
The Drive with Danny and CDOT from the MVP Electric Heating and Cooling Studios, 610 Sport.
The man is Art Stewart, 7 decades chasing hopes and dreams in Major League Baseball, special assistant to Royals general manager Dayton Moore. You can see him behind home plate at Kauffman Stadium or a minor league stadium in the Royals farm system near you. We're talking about the chart and how they go about scouting the whole ball player for the Kansas City Royals. It is a circle, half and half. It is found on page 245 of the book, by the way, that you can find at Amazon, Rally House, the Kauffman Stadium bookstore or team store. But half of it is what can be seen with the eye, the measurables, speed, power, hands, fielding, reflexes, size, stamina, durability, things like that. Half of it below the fold is the mental, the attitude, the personality, the background, and the winner. Obviously, not every player can score perfectly in everything. I've told you before that my own bias leans towards the talent,
leans towards the top half of it. Because I just give me the guy that can hit the ball the farthest and throw the ball the hardest. And generally speaking, I feel like those guys are going to win. You said it's exactly 50-50. When you have players that are great at one and worse at the other, middle at one, middle at the other, there's got to be in here, Art, and I know there is, there's got to be some things that you value more than others. How do you do that judgment of the imperfect ball player? Because no one's Hank Aaron. You know what I mean? Most players are imperfect. How do you pick and choose what matters most?
The top half of the circle is pretty obvious. We're looking for good athletes. You're looking for a kid with a good arm. You're looking for somebody that can run. If they can do those basic things, you have presumably a possibility of good prospect. You're looking for the bat speed, things like that that we see. The bottom half of the circle, when you talk about the things that are not seen, sometimes watching a kid the way he plays, is he a selfish kid? Is he just worried about himself compared, or is he right? You see him in with the team, you know what I mean? Associating with the ball players, one of the guys. Some guys are just, you know, for themselves. You can tell a lot, too, by the body language of a player. You know, if he strikes out and he sulks and, things like that. But the bottom half is something that you don't walk out there and see Derek Jeter play shortstop like we did in high school at Kalamazoo, Michigan, and say, boy, this guy's a heck of a player. I hope his bottom half is as good. I'm not saying that the bottom half has to be perfect, but the Royals like to have the ingredient of a good part of that bottom half of the circle. Because when you get the two together, you usually get a great ball player. And don't get me wrong, there's been great ball players that have not, filled out the bottom of the circle because of their sheer talent, Babe Ruth, something like that. But basically, that has proven over the years to be pretty solid.
So there's a few things here that strike out. Go ahead, Kenneth, if you want.
And I would say that there's probably been a number of players you can allude to, a guy like Rex Hudler, for example, that was perfect on the bottom half of it, but had enough of the top half that he was able to hang around the majors for 12, 15 years because guys like being around him.
You just brought up a great example. Rex Hudler, his ability was what it was, but why did he stay around so long? Because the bottom half of that circle, with the mental toughness and a drive and a determination, the way Rex played the game. He even mentioned, and we sit and have dinner once in a while, I could have been released easily if I didn't show that drive and how much bad I wanted to play the ball and do the extra things, it kept him in the big leagues about 11 years.
Art, so there's some guys on the team that I'm thinking of we've talked to you about Yordano Ventura before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable arm talent, has definitely had some mental side of the game stuff that has been a problem. Been pitching great recently. Dayton spoke a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago at this point, about how some of the guys, it was over a month ago because this was when the team was really struggling, that there's guys that are stubborn. And once you become world champions doing it one way, it's tough to get you to do it the other way. Like I see adjustment here on the bottom side. I see teachability on the bottom side. There are guys on this team, you know what I mean, that don't have all of that there. What is it that allows them to overcome that and be a Royal? Does that make sense? Because
yeah, well,
we've talked about Moose before. Moose didn't always love studying video.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's a well-documented example. What is it? Because Moose was top pick of the organization. Yeah. They invested a lot in that.
Yeah, and there are, you hit the word exactly. There are some kids that are stubborn.
Yeah.
They're absolutely stubborn. And no matter who talks to them, they're going to do it their own way. And the best way to handle that is with a hitter, let him go down on a Mendoza line. And eventually he will come and he will talk to whether it's a hitting instructor, as a position player. If it's a pitcher, he'll finally, you know, they'll finally concede and realize that they need help and they get help. Otherwise, they're going to fail. They're going to fail. And the adjustment part, as you just mentioned, is a key, because they have to do that in a lot of cases to overcome some of these faults that we're just talking about.
What is the single toughest attribute on this sheet, this chart? I would imagine it would at least be below the eye, or the below the fold, the things you can't see. What is the single toughest thing to scout and evaluate correctly in a player?
Well, boy, that's a tough one, Dan, because
that's why I'm here, Art.
Yeah, there's certain things. Mental toughness is so important. You know, the drive and the heart. Way back, I think I mentioned it this year, and it just to you, this just came to me. I was fortunate enough to, when I was a young man, scout a little, and I'll never forget it. And he taught me so much. As one of my early mentors was Paul Critchell. He only had about 3 years to live. But he was one of the greatest that ever lived. Signed Lou Gehrig, Whitey Ford, Phil Rizzuto, on and on and on.
Yeah, Lou Gehrig's a pretty good one.
Yeah, and he said to me, he said, two things, Art, always remember. And I'll never forget them, and I pass it on to our scouts. Do they love to play? And do they love to play the game? And do they want to play? That he says, player, you want a player that has the passion and loves this game and wants to play. And that's good advice.
Some of these
guys today get
that?
Big money, you know, and they figure, oh, we're set. But you want to be sure that, hey, this guy loves it and he'll give it everything all the way.
Hell, I'm sure it's obvious and I'm just missing it. If you loved the game, why wouldn't you? You said the two things are that you love the game and that you want to play the game. Who would love the game and not want to play it? Like, what's the difference there? What separates those
well,
two?
Well, the difference would be you get a player and he's got tools and he's struggling. And he's struggling. He thought, you know, that it was going to be easier than it is. It's tough to become a big league player. And as much as he loves the game, sometimes they get in their heads that they want to give up. They want to quit.
Young Danny Duffy.
Yeah, they want to quit. And when that happens, that affects, you know, do you want to play the game? If you start backing off on something, that's why Critchell said they got to want to play the game. They got to work through adversity. They got to work through the tough times and realize that they're going to have those tough times to make it to the big leagues.
Art Stewart, the book is The Art of Scouting. The stories in here are just absolutely ridiculous. The foreword is written by George Brett. You can get it on Amazon.com or at the team store at Kauffman Stadium. Ascend Books. The charts that we've been talking about on how the Royals scout players is on page 245. We will have Art sign a copy of his book and give it away in the next couple segments of the show. Art, as always, thank you for the time.
It's always great to be here with you fellas, and
we learned a
let's
lot.
Hope we're talking.
All right, again, so thank you, 610 Sports. Listeners, go check them out. They're, you know, obviously, if you're in Kansas City or the Midwest area.
Art Stewart, national treasure. Everyone, Art Stewart, national treasure.
I've got to get.
By the way, as some of you know, we have the Caesar and I, the Sportsaholics, we have a Hall of Fame, the Bo Jackson Hall of Fame, where it's just, you know, since Bo Jackson's in the Hall of Fame, we've created the Bo Jackson Hall of Fame where he gets to put things in. And in our Hall of Fame. And I'll say this, Art Stewart is inducted into our Bo Jackson Hall.
You know what? It's Art Stewart, it's like everyone has two grandpas, right? I mean, not everybody, but for, you know, whatever. You got two grandfathers for the most part growing up. And I really feel like Vin Scully and Art Stewart are baseball's grandparents right now. And unfortunately, Vin's passing away in a baseball sense. I mean, he'll still be around for quotes and stuff like that. But, I mean, Vin Scully's gone in 4 weeks, listeners. Like, tune in. Pay the $20 to get the app. Watch the game. And in fact, KTLA is broadcasting the last six Dodgers games, so that everyone can take it in. But so Vin Scully, listen, you know, pay attention. It's awesome. But so then now we're left with Art Stewart, who's got seven decades of baseball knowledge, still very clearly, you know, very sharp. His memory's better than mine. But that's my own fault. Buy the book. Eric, I went and I purchased the book after listening to that interview, because I'm like, you know what? I went to Amazon. I think it was $22. And it wasn't about – I did it kind of selfishly because I want to learn. I want to read about those stories. And yes, but I want to support Art at the same time. He's been great to us at the show, come on several times over the years. And
He's a great interview. There's no one – there is no one we're that's accessible to us that's more informed about baseball. Knows where things are.
And that's one of the perks of 610 Sports, is what I'm saying, you know, to you national listeners, is that they have this guy on all the time. Art comes on, and I'll try to, you know, take the audio when I can, and you know, we'll try to get him back on our show. I like it when he's on theirs, because it's in studio. The quality's a lot better. You know, he's comfortable and that sort of thing. But point being, buy his book, go to Amazon, The Art of Scouting with Art Stewart, check it out. You know, support the man who's like, he's the last guy. Like, Vin goes away in 4 weeks. I can't emphasize enough how much Vin Scully you should be watching right now.
You talked me right into it. It's like, it's one of those things where I sort of forgot, and he is, it's like, it's always nice when it's like, it's time for Dodger baseball, and you're just driving, like, I'll tell you, it can really make Southern California traffic a lot more tolerable to listen to some Vin Scully while you're tooling around in the late afternoons and evenings.
You know what? It's weird you mentioned that, because there's this one afternoon that I remember. This would have been maybe 07, 08. It was right when Loney and Ethier and Kemp and Billingsley and Russell Martin, all those guys all came up within the same year and the same calendar year. And it was a Saturday afternoon, hot as hell. Early spring, mid-spring, you know, like maybe probably end of April, early May. And I was living in Granada Hills, which is in the northern part of L.A., probably 15 miles from Chavez Ravine where the Dodgers play. And I just, like, the bug hit me. I'm like, what am I doing? It's Saturday afternoon and the Dodgers are playing right now. And I remember getting in the car and the game was about to start, so I was going to miss the first couple innings, which is standard issue for Dodgers baseball fans, but just being on the 118 and being and then eventually I think what was that the 101, just being stuck in traffic, but yeah, turning on the radio and listening to the game and just not a care in the world and just build up the excitement. The no hitter, the near no hitter, in fact I recorded it. I was so, like, the suspense that he built up with that Matt Moore Giants near that Corey Seager broke up with two outs in the ninth inning on his bobblehead, which I love Corey Seager. You were awesome for doing that. But it was one of the most, it was so suspenseful. Like, you're on the edge of your seat, even as a Dodgers fan, like I am, rooting almost for the guy. and he's counting. He's at 121. His previous high is 113. One can only imagine what's going through Bruce Bochy's mind as he paces around the dugout. Reminds me of a young Carl Yastrzemski, and you know, just like how he does it. It's like a symphony of words. And so, I guess at this point, I'm just gonna have to go. I've taped, logged audio because I want to listen to Vin Scully 10 years from now. So I'll just set my phone on record, set it by the TV, watch the game, and then save it. And then, you know.
I know. I still feel, I got to be honest with you, in some ways, and I'm sort of surprised where we are with technology that we can't basically computer generate Vin Scully talking. Like, but in some ways, we could have a cyber Vin that just continues on with us. I almost feel like, you know, it's like you should have the option to have whatever like you have an SAP button so you can listen to it in Spanish. I feel like you should have a Vin Scully button.
A VIN.
Even though, right, but it's like, it's almost like, the whoever's really doing the game, they're taking their words, but they process it through the Vin Scully 6000. And we should hear it in the peaceful pastoral tones of Reverend Vin Scully. God. He should be a reverend, by the way.
He's
a minister of baseball.
I mean, if Vince, I'll tell you this: if there's a church out there that really wants to pick up their attendance, you just put Vin Scully on your payroll. I'll be at that church every Sunday. I'll be at the 8 a.m. I'll be at the 10 a.m. and I'll be at the 1 p.m. service every Sunday.
It's time for Jesus baseball.
It's time for the Lord's word. Yeah. However, he goes, open your
it's
books.
Gospel time here.
Let's start at the beginning, shall we? yes, we shall.
I thought also that Vin Scully is so important and so prolific, especially in Los Angeles, that he is the reason that one of the X-Files characters' name is named Scully.
Yeah. Good point. I didn't
know. Named in honor, Chris Carter, creator of the X-Files, named Dana Scully in honor of Vin Scully.
Now, that is a fact.
Fact.
I did not know that.
Well, it's fact.
All right. Look, that's episode number 110. The 110, the backbone.
It is the 110.
The backbone of Los Angeles freeways, the 110.
Ventura, it's the Ventura. As America says, it's the Ventura. That's what we should. It's the Ventura Highway. It is the Ventura Highway edition. You should play that for the out credits. You should do America, Ventura Highway.
By the Eagles?
That is by America.
By America.
It is America. We started with Kaepernick and talking about America. So there's no more American band than the band America. We should definitely go out. To Venture Highway in the sunshine.
No, I know the song. I just thought it was really. I always thought it was the Eagles. That's how bad I. That's how low I think. I know.
It's like that's one of those things. Like you sort of think like they should be the Eagles.
Yeah. No. Obviously riding some Eagles coattails, which America.
It's one of those things. There are certain bands that this like one hit wonder that you just think that sometimes you think like a group of one hit wonders should just form to get one super band so they can actually have an album of hits.
Well,
America has their own greatest hit. Guys, America, we're going to plug America's greatest hit to the end.
That's right. We're also going to plug the Go Up, Show Up, Show Up, Go Up open mic every Sunday.
Show Up, guys, right, we're back. All the first three Sundays of September, my friends, the Show Up, Go Up, we are here in Los Angeles at the World Famous Comedy Store, the Belly Room upstairs in the back. From 11 to 1 this Sunday, next Sunday, the Sunday after that. We're just going to say the last Sunday of every month. And that is something to check out. And also you can watch us. You can follow us on Twitter and social media, Show Up, Go Up LA, and check us out on Periscope. You can watch from the luxury of your own phone.
There you go. I'm excited too, because here and within the next 3 weeks, we'll be doing more of these face to face, which will be nice. And
you should promise these things, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
That's true. Who knows? Who knows? But I would like to at least get the next one at least face to face. We'll start there. We'll start there.
All right.
But with that being said, guys, this concludes 110. Thank you for listening, And Eric, anything else?
This concludes 120 to 10. This concludes 110, guys. Well, the next time you hear us, the NFL season will have started, except for Tom Brady and Rod Ninkovich. And there's nothing more American than Rod Ninkovich and Tom Brady, America's greatest quarterback, the greatest human of all time. Tom Brady, back in 4 weeks, well, kind of 5 weeks, because I think we have a bye in there somewhere. We'll see you all. And then we'll start this all again October 5th against Cleveland. Until then, NFL, enjoy the Red Sox. Let's get to the World Series, guys. Let's see some stuff. I'm going to blow a train whistle and say stay a step.
Deal.
Stay a step. You don't care, I know. Venture Highway, midnight sunshine. Where the days are longer, the nights are stronger than moonshine. You're gonna go, I know. Oh, 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 oh. 'Cause the free wind is blowing through your hair, and the days surround your daylight there. Seasons crying, no despair. Alligator lizards in the air, in the air. Wishing on a fallen star, watching for the early train. Sorry, boy, but I've been hit by purple rain. Oh, come on, Joe, you can always change your name. Thanks a lot, son, just the same. Venture Highway in the sunshine, where the days are longer, nights are stronger than moonshine. You're gonna go, I know. Oh, 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 oh. 'Cause the free wind is blowing through your hair, and the days surround your daylight there. Seasons crying.